Or we're here because Krishna's misdeeds. After us, he just put us into solitary confinement and show us pictures of earth, of water, and food. Sorry, you can't eat, but here's a picture. Make you suffer even more. So Krishna seems to be providing. To some people, he's providing too much. And to other people, they seem to be in lack of some things. So either Krishna is whimsical, he dislikes some people's faces and he gives them extra, and he doesn't like other people's faces and he causes them to have some lacking. Or people, because of their own activities in this world, they're getting a certain result. The laws of cause and effect seem to be operative. If I do something bad to someone, then actually they want to do something, generally speaking, in reaction to what I've done to them. There's a reciprocation. So the laws of material nature, they seem to be a reciprocation to our own activities, and there must be a law maker and a law giver. Someone must have made the law that the sun's going to rise at a certain time, the sun's going to set at a certain time. Someone made the law that when we eat food, there's a process by which it can be digested, assimilated, and eliminated in all the different species of life, with all the varieties of food that the tiger eats, that the human beings eat, that the cows eat. Someone must have made all these arrangements, so it goes on in such a, generally speaking, a scientific way. So all we can say is, even if we look at the material nature, we can see so many wonderful things that an intelligent person has created, as Krishna said, yad yad vibhutimat sattvam srimad orjitam evava tattva evabhagachetvam mamate jangsa sambhavan. I know that all beautiful, glorious, and mighty creations spring from a spark of my splendor. Taiva bhavanai tena kim gyatena tva arjuna vishtabhyam idam krishnam ekam stenasti sito jagat. But what is there need for all this detailed knowledge with a single fragment of myself? I pervade and support this entire creation. So this is the illusory world where everyone is in prison. So what would be the spiritual world? What would it be like? There's descriptions in the Bhagavatam or the Brihad Bhagavatamrita of Gokumara going and visiting so many different places in the universe and seeing how much more wonderful the places that they go to are. He was in some village in India, then he went to Jagannath Puri and saw the opulence there. Then he went to Indraloka and saw the opulence there and was amazed. Then he went to Mahaloka and the opulence was further increased by many hundreds of times. He went to Tapaloka and saw the opulence there. He went to Brahmaloka, saw the opulence. He went through the coverings of the universe and saw that in each covering of earth and water and fire and air and ether, the opulence was multiplied many, many times. And finally he went into even the Brahmajyoti and saw that the opulence of the Brahmajyoti, the happiness there, surpasses millions of times the happiness we experience here. And then he went to Mahashiva Loka, he went to Vaikuntha, and the happiness was simply increasing until finally he reached the Vrindavan in the spiritual world, Goloka Vrindavan. And there the happiness was unlimited and always increasing. There was no end to the increase of the happiness there. Or as Prahlad Maharaj said, if the amount of happiness in Brahman is said that the happiness we experience here are 100 times the happiness they experience in Indraloka. And 100 times that happiness is on Marhaloka. And 100 times that happiness is on Tapaloka. And 1,000 times that happiness is in Brahmaloka. And 1,000 times that happiness is in Brahman. And if the happiness of Brahman was multiplied 100 trillion times, it wouldn't equal to an atomic fraction in one drop in the ocean of devotional service. And we think we've already reached the limit of our happiness in Krishna consciousness. That I'm an experienced devotee, I've been around for so many years, practically lifetimes of Brahma. So many Brahmas have come and gone since I've joined the movement. And I've experienced everything. I've had every kind of Mahaprasad there is. I've chanted my rounds in cars and airplanes. I'm an experienced person in Krishna consciousness. Although I still have no idea who I am. I have little real awareness of Krishna. I'm quite conscious of my material body, and I still believe I might be my material body. And even though I may have some doubts due to the Hare Krishna movement, I'm sure I'm at least the mind. And even if I'm not my mind, still my conception of life, I think, is pretty good. I'm doing all right. I really know a lot. I've been to school, I'm not a fool. So as long as, therefore, the actual devotees, they become humble. Not because they, you know, they try to be humble. Oh, I'm fallen, probably. I'm the most fallen. Step on me. I'm a blade of grass. No, they're not artificially humble. Because they realize how unlimited, how opulent Krishna is. How unlimitedly loving Krishna is. Therefore, in presence of Krishna and his devotees, they feel, as the demigods are feeling here, our reverence. Inconceivable, astonishing, opulence in Krishna. Therefore, they have no choice but to manifest our reverence and become humble, seeing insignificant. What to speak? Well, we ourselves have to agree to give up this false ego that we're hanging on to. This idea that my shelter is this material ego. That if I give up my false ego, well, I forget what they call my, something about personal, what do they call it? Your identification with this body, your prestige. What do they call that?
Self-esteem.
Yeah, I won't. If I give up my false ego, I'll give up my self-esteem. What to speak, I realize I'm 1/10,000th the size of Tip of Heron size. That's quite depressing. I'll walk around thinking, my God, I'm so small. I'm useless. What can 1/10,000th, something 1/10,000th the size of Tip of Heron size, what kind of value can I have? That all my identification, all my opulence, my wealth, my learning, whatever else, it's not even mine. It's just a product of the illusory energy. And I'm illusioned by it. And that actually I'm so tiny that anyone who actually saw me, they couldn't even see me. They just walked by me and be there. Hey, I'm here. Can't you see me? Sorry. I hear something I can't see. Now I come to the temple, and I realize why they wear their bed sheets. Because they have no brains. They're still living in their infancy, their childhood, and therefore they put these dolls on the altar, and they're playing with them. So their vision is that these are dolls that we're playing with. They can't conceive that this is actually the Supreme Personality of Godhead coming here in order to give us opportunities to serve Him. So unless we get the association of devotees, unless we can understand through the eyes of Shastra, then we can't actually understand anything of really what's going on. We can't perceive how Krishna is in our heart, giving us remembrance, knowledge, and forgetfulness, directing us. We can't even perceive how Krishna is moving the sun in His orbit. What to speak of how Krishna can come, not only in the deity, but in every one of these paintings, how Krishna can be personally present. How He can be personally present in our heart, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. What to speak of every atom. So unless we get the association of devotees, pure devotees, who can teach us the art of loving service to Krishna, these things become simply mysteries. They become, at worst, mythology, or great mysteries. So Krishna says, only if you serve my devotees in disciplic succession, try to utilize your energies in their service, so that eventually you find out you do what's pleasing to me, then it's not possible to actually enter into the mysteries of actually understanding me. And even when we become pure devotees, even when we come up to the stage of Mahabhagavat, even when we become Prema Bhaktas, that's only the beginning of devotional service, of perfection. Then beyond that, there's sneha, there's mana, there's raga, anuraga, bhava, mahabhava. And then that goes on, unlimitedly increasing. And even Krishna is finding out more about Himself. What to speak of His devotees. Even Krishna doesn't know the limit of his qualities. But in the association of His devotees, He's realizing more about His own qualities. So anyone who thinks that they've already reached the limits of devotional service, they got it all figured out, and they'll come back next Janmashtami. Just to see, maybe there's something new. Well, they've missed the whole point. So I'll stop there. Thank you. Any questions? Yes. You have something against the living entities in the spiritual world? They should have consciousness. The material nature is a manifestation of Krishna. In one sense, even the Krishna's material energy is pervaded by consciousness, our consciousness and Krishna's consciousness. So, but the material nature is, that's one of Krishna's energies. The energy, His effulgence, which doesn't have consciousness. And it's converted in such a way as to make it appear what we call the material energy. But it's actually just Krishna's effulgence. We could say in one sense it's a manifestation of Krishna's consciousness. But the material nature is actually, it's ultimately its spiritual nature, made in such a way due to our covering of our consciousness in such a way as we think it's material, but actually it's spiritual. But as Krishna has consciousness, we have consciousness, but one of His energies doesn't have consciousness. Krishna has to have everything. Anything else? Yes.
Working on the false ego, and so how can sanctified devotees encourage other devotees to
Why should they always try to encourage? They should encourage themselves. And if they're encouraged, then other people will also notice that they're encouraged. It's just like they go out and distribute books, they give someone a book, here, take this book and read it, Prabhupada would say. And they ask, well, what's in the book? They go, I don't know, they just encouraged me to come out here and distribute it. Read the books. Get others to read the books. Come to class. And when we find out how wonderful these books are, then we'll be encouraged to give it to others too. Otherwise, we don't know how wonderful the books are. Why would we want to give it to anyone? Except we want to get some money for ourselves. Make sure we have enough prasadam in the temple so we can eat. But the inspiration should be to give people these books because they're wonderful books and people will become wonderful if they read these wonderful books. So we're going out there to make people wonderful. Yes?
Maharaj, you mentioned that chanting Hare Krishna is the key in the success taking prasadam, but then over the period we take these things as a granted, like
therefore we don't take prasadam, we don't chant Hare Krishna. We're trying to learn how to chant Hare Krishna. If we chanted Hare Krishna, then we'd be in ecstasy, at least ecstasy. So we're not in ecstasy, it means we're not really chanting Hare Krishna. We're chanting something similar to Hare Krishna, but it's not exactly Hare Krishna. Still, when we take prasadam, unless we actually honor and deeply appreciate and relish prasadam, we're not honoring prasadam, we're munching on food. So it's consciousness. Unless we change our consciousness, we're not really chanting Hare Krishna, nor are we even properly honoring prasadam. Although there's some, because we know this, we've heard that this food is offered to Krishna, therefore there's some association with Krishna. And it's Krishna that makes everything spiritualized. There's nothing spiritual without Krishna there. So when we chant Hare Krishna, unless Krishna is there, unless when we eat prasadam, unless Krishna is there, then it's really, we're only partly actually performing our devotional activities or mixed with material consciousness. Yes?
So there are many people who call themselves humanists in this day and age, and they say that the highest consciousness is to be a good person. So how can we understand their thinking?
I don't know.
Can actually they be a good person?
What is a good person? Good for what?
Just thinking others in a good way. That's what.
What's a good way?
Respectfully.
So they respect them. How do they respect them?
I guess they don't fight with people. They don't argue with people. They think this is...
They don't fight with people.
Yeah, this is ethical.
So deer also don't fight with people.
Sorry?
Deer also don't fight with people. Are they also equally as good? I mean, besides the fact they don't even know who the person is. Someone's drowning in the ocean, and you go in there and you don't want to bother the person, so you take his shirt off, and you swim back to the shore, and the person drowns. You say, what happened? Well, I don't want to disturb the person. He looked like he was having some problems in the ocean, but you know, I don't disturb anyone. I'm a good person. So I decided at least to save his shirt. So how can you be a good person? First of all, you don't know what goodness is. We, from our point of view, unless you give someone Krishna, unless you help, then you're not their friend. You're doing harm to them. So unless you know what good is, you won't know how to do good for anyone. What to speak of yourself? If you don't know who you are, how will you know how to do good for something? If you think you're a car, and everyone else thinks you're a car, And they constantly try to put oil down your throat. You can't understand what you're doing, and I'm not a car. You won't know what to give, you know, if you don't know what to give. If you know that don't know who they are, you won't know what to give to them. Yes?
In the grihastha life, it's like, it seems like, since the day starts, you have to just rush, and sometimes it's so frustrating. Like, devotional life should be peaceful, you practice chanting, but it's always a rush that you have a limited time.
Not necessarily. It doesn't have to be a rush. It's so peaceful. Arjuna wasn't so peaceful. Wasn't Arjuna, you know, he's firing arrow one after another. He said, I seem to be in a rush out here. Maybe I should slow down, you know. There does seem to be a few hundred thousand people trying to kill me, but I guess I should keep on rushing around. No, he was rushing, but he did it for Krishna.
So sometimes it's like very stressful because so many things on your plate and you have less time and you don't know anyone to listen to the lecture peacefully, do your sadhana peacefully, but that doesn't happen. So you don't know when the day will come that you'll be able to do it. So you just pray to Krishna what you're doing at duty. But sometimes it's like...
Oh, while you're rushing around, chant Hare Krishna, then that's perfect.
You know, that puts in the rush.
What's that?
That chanting is also... Is
well, chant out loud when you're not, even if you're not chanting around. Just keep on chanting. No one's stopping you. There's no speed that you're going to go into, and then it says, sorry, you're going too fast. No chanting. So try to chant whatever you're doing. That will make it perfect. And if you can organize your life a little bit better, and maybe even delegate some of your activities or eliminate some of them, maybe you won't have to rush around so much. Maybe Krishna will give you more intelligence how to organize things better. Yes.
Maharaj, but what the, how we see as a practicing devotee registering for organ donor, like this thing is coming, like if people having severe disease that sometimes they need.
So you're very kind. You're going to give them some organ. You'll give them a new liver. They can eat more cows with your liver. So they're going to go to, they were going to go to Yamaloka anyhow. But now they can have an extended visit there. And because you were very kind and helped them go there, you get a free ticket too. Anything else? Yes. Well, we do love Krishna to some extent. And for Krishna's vision, he's very kind. So even a little service done to him, for him, he takes as a big thing. But, I mean, the reality of what real love is, from prema, we just have a very fractional amount of love for Krishna right now. We only have a fractional amount of awareness of Krishna. But we have some awareness, so it can't be discarded. But we shouldn't think that one little tiny drop of awareness of Krishna is equal to the whole ocean of Krishna consciousness. Well, take advantage of what Lord Chaitanya gave us. The process, it wasn't that literally there's like a storehouse that was kept secret and he opened it up and we don't know where it is and we're just running around looking for the storehouse so we can get love of God. Now the storehouse is in the books, following the process of devotional service. That's what he gave us. And as much as we follow it, then we'll be able to experience it. In the beginning there's some faith, then we associate with the devotees, we hear from their realizations, we try to apply them within our life. We become sadhana bhaktis. We try to regulate our lives in sadhana bhakti, following the rules and regulations and the instructions given by Śrīla Rūpa Gosvāmī in nectar devotion and our acharyas. Then we come to the platform of liberation. and we work on that platform. And then we come to anartha nivritti, nishta, then we actually get a taste for devotional service. Everything becomes tasteful. Everything is seen in relation to Krishna all the time, because we're always in Krishna consciousness, and therefore everything becomes wonderful. And that increases to ecstasy, asakti, where there's so much happiness and pleasure in Krishna consciousness, we can't forget Krishna even for a moment. And even if we forget Krishna for a moment, immediately the mind remembers Krishna again. And then we come to the stage of bhava, where the ecstasy is so great that material existence seems like just an idea or a dream. And then we come to prema, where there is no conception of any material existence. Everything is seen as spiritual. And then beyond that, we come to the platforms, different platforms of rasa, sneha, mana, raga, anuraga, bhava, mahabhava. And we enter into the different stages of rasa. So we may have some love for Krishna, but there's a lot more to get. One time I sent Prabhupada a check for these little blue Bhagavad Gitas, and he wrote me back. He said, "Thank you very much for this contribution of love, that we're all servants of Krishna coming in the simple succession. So if there's any thanks, it goes to our teachers in the simple succession who we're working under." Then he wrote me at the end, he said that, "Please study all these books that I've written, and sometimes afterwards you'll have to help carry on the disciple succession." So that's for all of us. Prabhupada is giving these books out of love, and if we read them and try to understand them and follow them, then we'll understand what love is. That's the disciple succession. Alright, thank you very much. Grandharaj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Gaura Premanande.